when we last left Rav Baruch, he was spending this Seder night, as well as the days before Pesach. And Pesach in the Bromzel by Yitzchok Shol, a place where he had spent his Siddurim for many years before this year. And a very interesting event happened that first Seder night in the Bromzel, which gave Baruch and others very much to think about. And this is what happened. It was Pesach Eve, and all the Jews had gathered in the Beis HaMedrash for davening. Lights twinkled in every Jewish window, and a holiday feeling permeated the entire city of the Bromzel. Davening was just about to begin when there arose a disturbance with the entrance of two men into the Beis HaMedrash who were arguing hotly. They were Aaron Shmuel and Bezalel Chaim, who carried on a brewery in partnership, selling their beer in the surrounding villages. It appeared that they had just met coming into shul and had discovered that each one had expected the other to sell their chametz, and now they learned that it had been left unsold. Since chametz which was left unsold over Pesach could not be made use of, it meant their ruination. But what could they now do about it? They were so grieved at such a grave oversight that in their distress they blamed each other bitterly, shouting and quarreling. But Bezalel Chaim claimed that as he had the job of traveling around, it was obviously his partner's place to attend to the matter of selling the chametz. But his partner found an excuse which nevertheless did not alter the fact that their chametz had not been sold. They were troubled indeed. They turned to the Rav to advise them how they stood regarding the beer in their brewery. The Rav called the Dayan, and together they decided as follows. The beer which was contained in the barrels at their brewery outside the town should be poured out, and nobody should have any benefit therefrom. And all the vessels and barley used for the beer making should be locked away until after Yom Tov. But Bezalel Chaim was not satisfied to leave the decision as it was, but begged the Dayan and Rav with tears in his eyes to find some tshuva, some penance, in the carrying out of which his sorely troubled conscience would be appeased. His partner too was deeply moved and also stepped forward to learn how they could make amends for the sin of being in possession of chametz on Pesach. Seeing the distress of the two simple but pious men, the Dayan strove to assure them that their guilt was not as grave as they thought, nor the penalty as severe as they believed they merited. When the service was over and the congregants dispersed, they were all engrossed in the topic of the two partners' oversight, the majority expressing their sympathy for them, while the learned among them, with the two older sons-in-law of Elazar Reuven among them, discussing the matter from the point of view of the din of the law and about chametz on leavened products in general. Yitzchok Shol and Baruch, walking home together, dwelt upon the deep sincerity of religious feeling of the two partners. It only shows how pure are the hearts of such ordinary Jews, remarked Yitzchok Shol, to which Baruch readily agreed. Aaron Shmuel, one of the partners, was born in the Bromzel and was known as a silent man. He rarely was heard to say anything, for he was very reserved by nature. Even in his prayers he was quiet, praying quietly as if to himself. Bezalel Chaim, on the other hand, was of a different type. He had originated from the village of Kamari and was therefore known as the Kamarian. His grandfather, Moshe ben Yamin, had been the first person to settle in that village on the estate of the nobleman Deyut and had earned for himself the nickname Yokel. The reason for this was that he was always singing Russian folk songs and dancing Russian folk dances. Moshe ben Yamin had been a horse dealer and in his business travels reached as far as Smolensk and Oryol. It was in those places that he learned the Russian songs and dances. Moshe Binyamin was in fact a pious Jew, and because of this reason he felt justified in his seeming frivolity. For he had once learned during a shir in Ein Yankov that it was a great mitzvah indeed to entertain and amuse people at weddings. And he further learned how the Tanoim and Amoraim carried out this mitzvah in their way. This gave him the urge to learn how he too could do something to bring pleasure to people at weddings, and thus it came about that he learned to sing and dance, and he did both with great success. He bought a Russian fur hat, a Russian peasant's garb, including a long pair of leggings, and whenever he learned of a Jewish wedding, off he went to entertain them in his Russian costume. That is how he earned the nickname of Yokel, for that is how he looked. When Moshe Binyamin first settled in Kamari, the estate owner was one named Yosep, a true friend and admirer of the Jews. He would often load up wagons full of grain, vegetables, and fruit, and send them to the Rav of the Bramzel, the Ptanchem Shmuel, for him to distribute among the poor and the needy. There was a good reason for this nobleman's friendship for Jews, for when he was a little boy of 8 years of age, he had fallen off a horse and had broken his collarbone. The doctor was immediately summoned, and he bandaged him up, but instead of getting better, the pain grew steadily worse, until the young lad could bear it no longer. He developed a high temperature and lost consciousness. Yosef's father was a freethinker and not particularly fond of the Jews. His wife, on the other hand, was a great admirer of Rabbi Shmuel Tanchum, the Rav of the Bramazil, and was a great believer in his saintliness. And so, without asking her husband, she hurriedly took her little boy to the Rav. When Rabbi Tanchum Shmuel saw the state the child was in, he ordered the removal of the bandages, and the child quickly regained consciousness. The Rav gave them his blessing, and the boy soon became well again. When Yosef's father returned home and learned that his wife had taken the boy to the Rav, he screamed with rage, "How dare she do this to me? I'll be the laughing stock of everybody now." He quickly sent a carriage after them to bring them home at once. At the same time, he sent a rider to the priest to ask him for a penance for his wife for having committed such a crime as to go to a rabbi. Even before the rider had returned, in walked Yosef with his mother in the seventh heaven of delight at the miracle of his recovery. The nobleman could not help but believe the evidence of his own eyes, but his hate toward Jews, and the Rav in particular, was so great that he cursed them furiously, shouting that it was just witchcraft, nothing more. Soon after this, the nobleman became very sick and died, leaving Yosef to inherit his title and estate. His mother brought him up to be a real friend of the Jews, and this he was truly all his life. While Moshe Binyamin never dreamed of accepting any payment for his entertainment at weddings, his reward came nevertheless, and this is how it came about. During one of the Jewish weddings at which, as was his custom, he danced and sang, dressed like a Russian yokel, there happened to be present the nobleman Yosef. Yosef had never before seen such a realistic act, and he was greatly impressed both by the entertainment and by the actor. He took a great fancy to him and eventually made him his right-hand man on his estate. He used to call him Moshke Moshkvil. From that day onward, Moshe Binyamin prospered greatly, yet despite the fact that he went to live at the nobleman's estate, he kept up his Judaism even more strictly than before. It was on that estate that his son Yosher was born, and he tried very hard to make a scholar out of him, but to no avail. Yosher was just no scholar, and so he eventually got him to help him in his work of looking after the business matters of the nobleman. Although Yosher was not studiously inclined, he nevertheless grew up to be a God-fearing man, and did not fail to go daily into the Bramzel to daven the Beis HaMedrash, and to attend the shir of Ein Yankov. Yosher's son Bezalel Chaim was also born on the estate, and was, like his grandfather and father before him, a simple, uneducated, but God-fearing Jew. He later moved to the village of Kamari, and later to the town of the Bramzel, where he became the partner of Aaron Shmuel in his brewery business, selling the beer in the surrounding villages. Because of his exceeding piety and religious fervor, it was not surprising that on that particular Pesach, when he and his partner had inadvertently omitted to sell their chometz, he felt so badly. That Seder night was no pleasure to him. He made a solemn vow that not only would he not benefit from the beer which was already made at the brewery, but that he would accept no profit from whatever the brewery contained. He meant to show the Almighty how truly sorry he was at what had happened. Only after he made this vow did he feel easier and continued the Seder with a lighter heart. When he retired for the night and was just about to fall asleep, he suddenly was startled into wakefulness by a red glow shining through his window. He realized at once that fire had broken out somewhere and quickly put on his clothes. By the time he came outside, the sky glowed even redder, and people were running about shouting, "Fire!" without as yet knowing where the fire exactly was. As the people ran in the direction of the fire, they soon realized it was just on the outskirts of the town. In fact, just about where the brewery was. And sure enough, when Tzal Chaim reached the spot, he found the brewery and the two nearby houses in flames, with people running to and fro with pails of water, vainly trying to put out the fire, which had obviously gotten out of control. All they could do now was to see that the fire did not spread any further and reach the houses in the Brumsel. When the people saw Bezal Chaim and realized that everything he possessed had been destroyed in the flames, and he was now a poor man, they looked upon him with sympathy in their eyes. But to everyone's astonishment, they found him beaming and just dancing for joy. When he saw that there was no possible doubt that the brewery was completely destroyed, he ran as fast as he could to his partner and Shmuel, woke him up and shouted gleefully, "Thank God, I have good news to tell you. Our brewery has just gone up in flames, and now we can be sure that we shall have no benefit from the chometz there. In any event, I had already made a vow that I could take nothing from the brewery's profits." Aaron Shmuel could hardly take in all that his partner had told him so excitedly. What was he so delighted about if they were ruined? But when he finally absorbed the fact that they had actually lost their brewery, he felt that it was Hashem's will and an atonement for their sin of failing to sell their chometz that Erev Pesach. Bezalel Chaim was too excited and elated to think of going back home to sleep. Instead, he made his way to the Beis HaMedrash, where he found quite a number of Jews who had also decided to spend the rest of the night there, seeing that they were up anyhow. He found them talking about the fire, and he came in as someone was remarking that might have been sent as a punishment to the partners. "Don't call it a punishment," said Bezalel Chaim. "I choose to regard it as a salvation. I feel very much easier now, and I'm not a bit worried about our financial loss. As long as the good Lord will grant us life and strength, I am confident He will also provide us with our livelihood." Everybody was so busy talking about the strange coincidence of the fire that they forgot to inquire as to its origin. On the morrow, however, they learned of the ghastly tragedy deliberately perpetrated by one of the peasants who lived in one of the houses that had burned down. It appeared that his father had a terrible fight with his next-door neighbor, who was also a peasant, in which the neighbor had struck his father with an iron rod and broken his father's ribs. His father had been taken to the hospital more dead than alive, and his son, in order to take revenge, had gone out in the middle of the night, bolted the door of their neighbor's house from outside so that no one could escape, and had deliberately set fire to it. Three of the occupants saved themselves by jumping out from an upper window, but the four remaining occupants perished in the flames. When Yitzchok Shol and Boruch reached the Beis HaMedrash next morning, they had already heard the terrible story of the tragedy of the fire. They found the congregation reciting Tillim, for it was still too early to daven. And it was none other than Bezalel Chaim who stood on the bima leading the psalms. And far from looking like a man who had in fact just lost all of his worldly possessions, Bezalel Chaim was reciting the psalms as a veritable song of praise to the Almighty for Hashem's goodness. Here you have an example of a simple Jew, Yitzchok Shaul said to Baruch. How different he is in outlook from his non-Jewish cruel neighbors who can murder each other without a qualm. Yet the Jewish scholars look down upon such a simple Jew because he is not learned, overlooking his wonderful qualities of character. Baruch nodded his head, and Yitzchok Shaul continued, My father told me in the name of the Baal Shem Tov that the simple Jew is like a field that has been sown with seed and depends for its nourishment upon the rain which falls from the skies in order to give its fruit to man. Whereas a scholar is comparable to a field which in addition is artificially watered, which may give a better harvest, but which in no way lessens the value of the other field left to nature. To his surprise, Baruch found that during his talks with Shmuel Nochem, he was learning quite a deal from him as well. For Shmuel Nochem related what he himself had heard and learned from many Hasidim during his absence from home. Also, what he had learned from his contacts with people by watching their behavior. For instance, he told Baruch about a certain miller named Yerachmiel Hirsch, for whom he worked a few hours daily during the time he was studying in Dubrovna so that he could be self-supporting and not depend upon anyone else for his keep. This Yerachmiel Hirsch was a real scholar, but Shmuel Nochem told Baruch that he had the failing common to so many other scholars, namely that he looked down with contempt upon all who were uneducated, irrespective of their qualities of character. Apart from Shmuel Nochem, the miller had two other Jews working for him. One, Ephraim Kalman, was a scholar at least as great as the miller, and Yerachmiel Hirsch treated him with every sign of respect and consideration. The other assistant was called Baruch Shimon, and this poor fellow had the misfortune to be entirely lacking in education. Although this in no way hampered him in his task of loading and unloading the wagons of grain, the miller took every opportunity of belittling him and showing in no uncertain manner that he held him completely in contempt. If this happened when Ephraim Kalman was by, he did not hesitate to reprove his master, quoting to him from the sages to the effect that even if he happened to be a Torah scholar, he need take no credit to himself and think himself superior because of it. The miller had so much respect for Ephraim Kalman that he swallowed the reproof without a word, but he did not alter his attitude towards Baruch Shimon in the least. One day, when Shmuel Nochem arrived at the mill, he found that there was no grain to be ground and was a witness to the following scene. Yerachmiel Hirsch had just returned from the Beis HaMedrash, where he had given his usual Gemara shiur, his Gemara class, which incidentally was greatly admired in the town, and seemed particularly pleased with himself. He hurried up to Ephraim Kalman and repeated the shiur for his approval. While these two were busily engaged in their Torah discussion, Shmuel Nochem saw that Baruch Shimon went quietly to a corner where he began saying Tillin to himself with tears trickling down his cheeks. Shmuel Nochem felt that the poor fellow was weeping because of the fact that he could not take part in any Torah discussion due to his lack of education. When the miller and his learned assistant had concluded their discussion, the miller turned around and noticed Baruch Shimon in the corner, eyes closed, reciting Tehillim. He went up to him and recognized that he was reciting the Hallel, but with many mistakes. So with a voice full of contempt, he sneeringly said, What has the poor Hallel done to you? You're absolutely murdering it! And pleased with his own witticism, he burst into derisive laughter. Poor Baruch Shimon looked absolutely heartbroken and bewildered. Then threw a look of gratitude to his co-worker Ephraim Kalman, who was giving their boss a good telling off in a voice full of fury. You ought to know, he rebuked him, that our sages tell us that for every word of praise to the Almighty that comes from the lips of a Jew, an angel is born. And these angels speak always in defense of the Jew in whose merit they have been created. How dare you then laugh at poor Baruch Shimon when he was singing God's praises and causing angels to be created? And what angels they would be, scoffed Yerachmiel Hirsch. If their creation depended upon Baruch Shimon's words, they would all be born crippled. And he laughed again at his witticism. And what sort of angels do you think are born from our Torah learning? Asked Ephraim Kalman. Now that is where you can be sure that the angels will be perfect, healthy, and strong, as if carved of iron or stone. And their songs would reach right up to the celestial throne itself, said the Miller proudly. For my part, I am convinced that the Almighty would find much greater delight in the angels, which you term crippled, but which come from the sincere words of simple, good-hearted Jews, than from those created from the words of people who are haughty in their Torah knowledge, retorted Ephraim Kalmer. The Miller said nothing more, but from that day on, he never again attacked Baruch Shimon in the presence of Ephraim Kalman. This did not stop him, however, from persecuting Baruch Shimon even more than before. He rebuked him for taking time off to go to the Beis HaMedrash twice daily to pray with the minyan, but Baruch Shimon insisted on his right to this privilege. My time for prayer belongs to me and is as holy to me as Shabbos and Yontif, when you cannot expect me to work, Baruch Shimon told his boss fearlessly. But the Almighty doesn't want any special prayers from you, the Miller told him heartlessly. It's enough if you say your prayers at home. This was too much for the poor fellow, and he chokingly replied, Is it my fault that God had not blessed me with a good brain so that I too could have become a scholar? And can I help it if I must spend my time carrying sacks of grain for a living so that I have no time for Torah study? The Miller had a nephew who had come to live with him, as he had no children of his own. This nephew was named Sholem Yechiel and came from Harki. He was a great friend of Yitzchok Scholl's and, like him, was a keen follower of the Baal Shem Tov's new way of life. Sholem Yechiel came along in time to hear how his foster father was putting poor Baruch Shimon to shame and his heart-rendering reply. Uncle, called out Sholem Yechiel pleadingly, do listen to what the great Baal Shem Tov teaches. He says that he values this simple but sincere ordinary Jew with his goodness of heart much higher than the Torah scholar who puffs himself out with pride because of his knowledge of the Torah. He then told his uncle many things about the Baal Shem Tov and his teachings, and the Miller listened without saying anything. But his nephew's words must have touched a chord, for it was a fact that he never again persecuted Baruch Shimon. Shmuel Nochum told all this to Baruch with great enthusiasm, especially when he talked about Sholem Yechiel. He was delighted to find in him such a fine friend with his Hasidic ideas which have so appealed to Shmuel Nochum. Yitzchok Scholl was positively thrilled with the unbelievable improvement in his brother-in-law and was justly proud of him. And Baruch himself was deeply affected by all that Shmuel Nochum had related, and now felt more than ever drawn towards the new way of life represented by Hasidism. Baruch now resolved in earnest to learn all he could about Hasidus and the events which led to this new culture. His source of information was, at the moment, his friend Yitzchok Scholl, whose knowledge of the subject was indeed vast. The youngest son-in-law of the smith of the Bromzel could talk to him endlessly, and Baruch asked him questions to his heart's content. And further developments in the life of Baruch and what he found out about earlier Hasidus, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the coming installments.